are a few absolutes in life. Taxes is one. Mm-hmm. Death is another. And for those of us who are lucky enough, aging
somewhere between
is another one. Yeah, somewhere between the two, we have aging.
Every minute of the day of the year, every year of our lives, as we slowly, okay, let's not get depressed about it. Let's just agree that we should aim to age gracefully. How about
that? Yeah, okay, if you say so. Today, though, let's take a closer look at a disease that often comes with aging, and it's tragic. It's a very difficult one for patients and for families. It is Alzheimer's. And according to the Alzheimer's Association, 1 in 3 senior citizens die from Alzheimer's or from another form of dementia.
And it's kind of really annoying, isn't it? As we get better at treating and curing other non-communicable diseases such as heart disease and cancer and so on, Alzheimer's and these other dementias are affecting more and more people. So it feels like we're beating cancer, and now, like the eternal video game of life, has got another boss for us to take on.
It does. It does. Our brains are tricky machines. So today we're going to hear from two different experts leading two respective studies for the treatment of Alzheimer's. This is also notably Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month this June. So without further ado, this is what matters on today's episode of Discovery Matters.
So my mum, Teresa, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2015. We had started to notice memory changes, unusual memory changes in her around 2012. It was different changes in her behavior, becoming more erratic about things, hiding things, finding things in unusual places. So her context and her ability to position things in her mind was starting to go. So she was diagnosed through the memory clinic in St. James's in Dublin. Through a series of tests, memory tests, an MRI scan, it's quite a lengthy process to get diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And it's a devastating diagnosis. And it felt like the reverse of a child learning. It felt like she was losing her language skills, her abilities, her perception. I always felt so sad for her that the world around her seemed like it was changing. To her, the world was becoming an unfamiliar place. And that must be so frightening. And like most people, a lot of people with Alzheimer's or dementia, she just wanted to go home. And fortunately, we were very close to her childhood home. We were able to bring her there regularly. On the couple of occasions she did wander off, that's where she went. But she really focused on us, her family. We were her anchors, I suppose, her lighthouse, her rocks.
A familiar voice there.
Yeah, this is Sinead Allen. She is on our comms team. She's our friend and colleague. Sinead sadly lost her mother in January of this year.
I heard somebody say once that through Alzheimer's, you're losing the person that you know and that you love before they've gone. And I think that was the hardest part for us, seeing mom change, seeing her lose her sharp, fiery spirit, because my mum was a woman who could have commanded armies, and seeing her lose those aspects of her personality that we had known growing up. And we were her anchor in an unfamiliar world. And of course, when we were kids, she was ours. So I'm glad that we were able to do that for her. Looking at all the research that's out there now, we are still very hopeful that something can be found to help stop the progression of Alzheimer's. I know that it's a very slow progressing disease, and I'm in my 40s now, and there's Alzheimer's in the family. So it's possible that my brother and I might have a genetic disposition towards it. It's entirely possible that we don't. But Alzheimer's research is something I always keep an eye on. I'm always very hopeful for. And I would love to think that one day we can do more.
And it is the experience of individuals like Sinead that drives research to cure Alzheimer's disease.
I've always been fascinated with the brain from a very, very early age. I can't understand why anyone would want to study anything else, to be perfectly honest. It's amazing.
This is Dr. Lucy Vivash.
I'm a research fellow at Monash University, which is in Melbourne in Australia. And I'm a medical researcher, so I am particularly interested in researching neurodegenerative diseases, both imaging techniques to better diagnose them, as well as clinical treatments for actually treating patients and preventing or halting the progression of disease.
Lucy's story starts when she was a child and she'd help her grandma who had MS, multiple sclerosis. That influenced her decision to study neuroscience.
I always wondered whether or not I would want to be like my nan and lose my body but keep my mind. You know, even up to right to the end, she was still sharp as a tack. She couldn't see anything, she couldn't move, but she could still completely pull you down a peg or two.
She ended up at Monash University studying tauopathies.
So they're diseases, neurodegenerative diseases, that are caused primarily by the accumulation of a protein called tau. And the work that we've been doing most recently, we've most recently published, is in a disease called behavioral variant frontotemporal dementia, which is one of the tauopathies.
So that's frontotemporal dementia. It's shortened to FTD often, right?
That's right. Lucy says this disease is highly disruptive and very distressing for patients.
It presents with behavioral abnormalities, impulsive behaviors, kind of wacky behaviors, socially inappropriate, kind of sexually explicit, weird kind of food preferences and intolerances, and very, very strange behaviors that can be very upsetting for families and for the patients themselves.
So what does her research look like then?
Recently, she and her team have been working on a drug called sodium selenate, which acts to reduce the levels of this toxic protein tau in patients with FTD.
So essentially what happens is the sodium selenate activates an enzyme in the brain that reduces the amount of tau that is in the brain overall and allows the brain's sort of natural clearance mechanisms to get rid of the tau. And this then is preventing further decline in these patients. So it doesn't kind of roll back the clock, but it certainly stops the clock. Is the results we're getting so far for a good proportion of the patients that we're really seeing some real strong benefit.
Okay, so this sounds exciting. How far has she got?
It's early yet. The study that she published was a phase 1B study, but right now she's recruiting for phase 2. The great thing is that research shows that sodium selenate can be used for other degenerative diseases.
We're also testing our drug, sodium selenate, in another disease called progressive supranuclear palsy. So this is a movement disorder that is also caused by tau. Again, it's that same pathogenesis, the same underlying process. The disease just presents in a different way. So we're really focused on sodium selenate through its actions on tau in actually a suite of different neurodegenerative diseases.
So this all sounds really hopeful as a treatment for early onset dementia, but look, this is Discovery Matters. I want juicy details about how Lucy and her team sort of moved forward and discovered all of this.
Sure, let's dig in. Lucy told us that the discovery of sodium selenate actually came through one of her colleagues who was developing it as a treatment for prostate cancer.
So upstairs neighbor, Chris, came to us and said, oh, this PP2A, it's involved in tau, and tau's involved in all these neurodegenerative diseases. What do you think? And so we sort of were like, oh, it's tau, let's have a look into this. And yeah, it was just sort of a kismet moment, really, of us being able to say, well, actually, yeah, this could work. This could really work.
Lucy says that while amyloid and Alzheimer's are People have been reading about the connection between amyloid and Alzheimer's. It's really being studied. It's correlated. It's also interesting to know that the tau seems to correlate very highly with the actual cognitive decline that Lucy and her team are seeing in patients.
And I think there's a big interplay between all of these different proteins and neurotoxic pathologies that are ongoing. So it might be that in the future you don't get treated for Alzheimer's or FTD or whatever it may be with just one drug, but it's a multiple different drugs. And this is sort of where some of the other work I've been doing looking at better diagnostics comes in that we're sort of aiming towards what we like to call precision medicine, which they're very, very good at in cancer, but we're not quite there with neurology yet. So the idea being that if you have this abnormality in this protein, then you take this drug. And if you have the abnormality in this protein, then you take this drug. And so there might be in the future the application of combination therapies that are very much personalized to individual patients to really like actually get at what is driving their disease.
Okay, so again, and we've done this a lot in the last few episodes, this is personalized medicine rather than a one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly.
So some of the effects of sodium selenate that Lucy has seen from the phase 1b study, what are they?
Yeah, and that's an important reminder that this is early days, but so far, what's great is though mild side effects have been detected, the team hasn't seen any serious adverse effects on the patients who've been using the drug.
So we're not getting any systemic problems, anything to do with their heart, their kidneys, liver, blood, all that kind of thing. That it's been very safe.
When looking at results of this phase 1b trial, Lucy could see consistency among the data that made her think, yeah, there's something here.
The real kind of the feather in my cap the day that I got to show this off to the team was when we found out there was two patients who had genetic abnormalities, one of which was associated with tau and one of which was not associated with tau. And the patient who had the non-tau related genetic mutation had unfortunately not responded to the treatment, which is kind of what we would expect given the mechanism. But the patient who had the tau associated genetic mutation had absolutely gone great guns. He'd done fantastic. And so this really solidified that actually this was real. You know, if they'd been the wrong way around, would have been complete cactus, would have been completely done. But this really sort of reinforced the point, and everyone was just like, oh, that really? But what about? And like, ah. And I just got to every single possible question that they threw at me. I was like, no, yeah, this is fine. I checked this, I checked that. What about this? I checked that. But it was solid. And so that was really good to be able to just have anticipated and gone through every possible explanation, and still we had something good.
So this is one way the future of treatment against Alzheimer's might look. But another way, we could rethink the whole idea of aging.
There's a concept known as health span, which is that the longer you live, the greater the risk you are for poor health span.
So who's this?
This is Dr. Joshua Hare.
I'm in Miami, Florida. I'm a professor of medicine at the University of Miami. And I am a co-founder of the biotechnology company Longeveron.
And what is their focus?
So Longeveron was founded with the imprimatur of tackling aging.
Well, there's this new paradigm in medicine right now known as the geroscience paradigm.
And the geroscience paradigm holds that aging is the biggest risk factor for all diseases, whether you're talking about neurologic, cardiac, cancer.
Joshua and his team have been thinking maybe there's a new approach that medicine needs to tackle going forward, and that is to actually treat aging.
So this is kind of like flipping the treatment on its head, tackle the aging to tackle the disease, and just treat aging as a disease. Okay.
In heart disease, we know that high blood pressure is a risk factor for heart disease. So over the years, we have developed treatments for high blood pressure as a way to reduce heart disease. So if we now recognize that aging is a much bigger risk factor for all diseases, including heart disease, maybe we should be treating aging the way we treat hypertension. Another example in heart disease is Alzheimer's disease, right? As Alzheimer's disease becomes more and more prevalent as people age.
So this is, you know, part of the modern world's big conundrum, right? We live longer, but the extra years that we're seeing in modern populations aren't always really good quality years.
Exactly.
In fact, they could be very low quality years in hospital and so on.
Completely. So looking at frailty, Joshua and his team discovered in an early study that when they measured cognitive function, it was cognitive function in people with frailty that got better.
So this was a very, very fortuitous discovery, and it was very exciting to see, wow, the cell therapy with Lomecel-B wasn't only improving physical function in frail individuals, it was also producing cognitive improvements. So maybe, it could have cognitive improvement in people with Alzheimer's disease.
So Joshua mentioned the name of an investigational drug there. What's it made from?
It is made from special living cells called medicinal signaling cells, or MSCs, that are isolated from fresh bone marrow tissue donated by adults aged 18 to 45.
Okay, so this is the company's lead therapeutic candidate, is that right?
That's right. And Joshua says there was a second discovery in the same study that really brought it all together for them. And this came about when he talked to experts in the field of Alzheimer's.
And they also had this wonderful aha moment. And we were told by some experts in the field, this made a lot of sense because of the problems that the Alzheimer's field was having. There was a dominant hypothesis that Alzheimer's is caused by the deposition of unwanted proteins in the brain, amyloid plaques and tau proteins. And most of the efforts in biotechnology and research for Alzheimer's were to design medicines that could remove those Alzheimer's plaques.
Joshua and his team studied 33 patients split between, of course, a randomized placebo arm and the recipients receiving their investigational therapy.
We really tried to study the mechanism. We measured a whole host of biomarkers in the blood that give us an insight into what the mechanism is. And we did imaging on the brain. We found two things that were very exciting and provocative that will be tested for validity in the phase two study. Some of those things we found provisionally was an improvement in anti-inflammatory markers in the bloodstream, but also an improvement in biomarkers for blood vessel function, very importantly. We also did imaging with MRI of the brain and found provisionally that the size of the hippocampus got bigger in patients who received the Lomecel-B. The hippocampus is one of the very important sites in the brain where new memories are formed. So we think that there was a very, very exciting clue that the cells might be actually allowing the hippocampus to grow more neurons and function better. And we look very much forward to testing that in our upcoming phase two study.
So Joshua, quite a lot like Lucy, is not done with the research yet, right? So
right.
It's super, super early days.
Right.
What else are they learning from these very early studies?
Well, there are several hypotheses for how to treat Alzheimer's. One of them is the hypothesis of neuroinflammation, which is that a major contributor to Alzheimer's could be that the brain is inflamed.
We had a number of supporting information for our hypothesis. One was the fact that the Lomecel-B had the potential to reduce neuroinflammation. And two, we had already shown that it improved cognitive function in people with aging frailty. So this made perfect sense for us to go ahead and and do our study.
So this is really, really early days. I think it's important to underscore that, lest we give people false hope. But,
right.
You know, when does Joshua think there's going to be results?
At least 5 or 10 years away.
A big part of that will depend on the results of the phase two. We'll have the results of the phase two within 5 years, and depending how good they are, will help us accelerate the phase three.
So he's made this really important point, right? You know, Alzheimer's Disease International says there's an estimated 50 million people living with the disease and dementia globally, and a treatment would have this huge impact on global health.
Exactly. While it is too late for Sinead and her mom, the fight against Alzheimer's is slow and steady and hopeful.
Well, that's the whole wonderful part of being in the field of discovering new therapies. It's a wonderful endeavor to try to help people who presently have what we call a major unmet need. So that maybe combines scientific discovery, which is wonderful in and of itself, but it also is coupled to doing some good for people who are suffering and are in need. So it's a wonderful combination, and those of us who get to work in this field are very, very fortunate.
This is a tough one because it takes an extra long time. And you know, phase one studies are safety studies, so we're a long way off anything being proven to work. But it feels like, you know, while it may be too late for many, and maybe even for you and I, Dodie, that things are moving forward. Yeah.
What I like about what we learned from Lucy and Joshua is just that open curiosity is, you know, a colleague who was looking at another kind of cancer thought, maybe here's a connection for you to study about the brain. And, you know, there are several paths to finding a discovery that can help us lead better lives as we age. Mm-hmm. Because we want to age. We're lucky if we get to be old, aren't we?
Exactly. And aging gracefully, well, you know, it's the way. Our executive producer was Andrea Killen, and this podcast is produced with the help of Bethany Grace Armit Brewster. Editing, mixing, and music by Tom Henley and Banda Productions. My name is Connor McKechnie.
And I'm Dodie Axelson. Please rate us on Spotify, where we've got a poll running under the episode description. You can also find us on whichever platform you use to listen. We'll see you when we come back with another episode of Discovery Matters. Thanks for listening.